So as the song goes, you got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them. And I've had a couple of situations in the past couple of weeks that have made me do exactly that. Let's start with the fold them part first. So you may have seen the Synology NAST review that I released last week. And like all my videos, I stand by my work. I'm proud of the videos that I create, at least these days, because I put a lot of effort into them. And if I feel like a video is going to go nowhere, I just don't release it. I felt good about that NAS review that I did, and I feel like it was a fair and honest critique of the product, and it disseminated information that would be valuable to users, either whether that product would be good for their needs or, like I saw in the comments, whether it would not be good for their needs or turn them off to that company entirely. I mean, that's an equally valid response to seeing a review. You know, it's not just, oh, this is a good product, but maybe it's not right for you. Unfortunately, though, that video was taken very differently than what I had anticipated, where a lot of the comments were negative, and not necessarily about the product, but rather about the video itself. I had a lot of people complaining that it was just an ad or something sponsored or whatever. And I'm trying to wrap my head around that because I went out of my way in that video, like I have been in the reviews that I've done in the past few years, to make it very clear exactly where that product came from, how I got it. So it's more transparent for the viewer to know where I stand, you know, in the whole picture of things, right? That was a NAS that Synology provided me at no cost for the review. So, like I'm legally required to do, that's something that you have to do in the US. The FTC requires you to disclose if you receive something as part of a review for free. Like I'm legally required to do, I disclose that. But I went beyond that by also making it clear that just because Synology provided me that product for the review, they didn't have any input into the review. They didn't say, as a condition of providing me that product, I had to say specific things. There were no talking points that they gave me or anything like that. It was just, we're going to ship this to you and, you know, go ahead and do your review. That's really all the conversation came down to. And then I also made it very clear, also along those lines, that beyond them providing me the product, there was no other compensation. I get emails literally every day from various companies that want me to do a review in quotation marks, where they'll provide me with the product to review, which is very normal for reviews. And we'll get to this in a little bit. But also offering other forms of compensation for doing that review, whether it's a promo code, whether it's some sort of commission-based system, you know, where you do like an affiliate link and you get a cut of that percentage, or just straight up cost, right? I've had potential, you know, review companies come to me and say, we'll pay you X amount of money in addition to this, or just ask me like, how much would it cost for you to do a review on our product? And of course, I'm not going to accept money for that because that completely changes the relationship. It takes it from being an honest review to being a legitimately sponsored video, which is an ad. Because if they're paying you, now suddenly they have control over the video, which I'm simply not willing to relinquish, right? My channel is mine and mine only. I'm not going to allow anyone else to dictate the content that goes into an episode. And that's what's really frustrating about the response to that review about the Synology NAS is I made all of this very clear without spending many minutes explaining in detail like I did just now that whole situation. I just made it obvious, like, look, they sent me this thing, but otherwise, you know, I'm putting out my honest opinion on this and I hope that you trust me. And clearly, too many people didn't trust me, which is really frustrating. because I've tried to work really hard in all of my videos, not just the reviews, but all my videos, to try to give accurate, trustworthy information. The people that I am responsible to are the viewers. I'm not responsible to YouTube. I'm not responsible to companies or manufacturers or anyone else. It's the viewers that are my focus, because they are the reason why I create videos. So to have that many people in the comments basically say, no, we don't trust you, that stings a little bit. I think part of it is because, not necessarily that those people don't trust me specifically, but rather they don't trust anyone on YouTube anymore. And I think that's in some ways kind of reasonable, simply because you do see a lot of reviews in quotation marks that really are maybe a little bit too glowing, where if you pay attention during the review, it becomes clear that that was a sponsored thing. Too many YouTube content creators don't disclose where their products come from. In fact, I got the inspiration for that little intro bit where I explain they sent me the product, but I'm editorially independent, no money changed hands. I got that from another YouTube creator, Gerald Undone, who does camera reviews. He does a very similar thing where he spends 30 seconds at the beginning of his episodes explaining the relationship between him and the manufacturer, right? If a manufacturer flew him somewhere for a product launch, he'll disclose, well, they paid for my flights, they, you know, paid for my hotel, but, you know, otherwise they didn't have any say into this episode, anything like that. You know, he's very clear about that. And interestingly enough, the photographic community on YouTube really appreciates that. I've heard many people compliment his videos in their own, saying this guy is doing it absolutely right by being as transparent as he can, so that the viewer understands what the relationship is and they can adjust their expectations accordingly. So clearly some communities get it and understand, you know, how it's supposed to be when it comes to that disclosure. But I think in the tech YouTube community, it's just too much of the Wild West, especially since we see a lot of companies trying to get those products in front of eyeballs, right? Of all the different categories of products to see a review on or sponsored video on YouTube, technology is the biggest, clearly. So a lot of YouTubers get enticed into, you know, do a review, we'll give you an affiliate code, we'll pay you some money, whatever, and fall for it, you know, and don't disclose. Or maybe they do, but don't make it as clear. Maybe they just check the little box when they upload the video that said, you know, this is, you know, this contains paid content, and then just leave it at that and don't disclose in the video. I prefer to disclose very clearly in the video instead of checking that box. I don't like the way YouTube does it with the whole, you know, this video contains paid content, because there's no nuance to that. It's just a yes, no kind of flag. So viewers don't quite understand how that works. So I could understand, I guess, some people coming to that review with the pitchforks out because they just see it all the time everywhere else. Something else that people criticized that video about is that it was too complimentary of the product. You know, I had people in the comments saying that you're being too nice to it. You didn't say anything bad about it. Clearly, this is sponsored because you didn't criticize it at all. Well, that's not true. I did. There were a few things that Synology did as like a software limitation intentionally to help drive sales of their accessories and their hard drives and whatnot that I called out in that review. I legitimately do not like some of the things that they're doing. There are workarounds. Of course, you can still put your own hard drives in there, but Synology would prefer that you buy all those parts from them. I think people glossed over that maybe just because, again, they went into this review expecting to not like it. I don't know. But the reason why the rest of the review is very complimentary of that NAS is because I legitimately think it's a good product. And that gets to another thing is, I don't want to review garbage, right? I really try not to do that because, one, it's a waste of my time, And two, it's a waste of the viewer's time. Most people can spot garbage products a mile away. It's very rare that a big name company would put out a product that really truly is horrible. Synology has been around long enough and has a good enough reputation. They're just not going to do that. They can't afford to do that because that could ruin their good reputation and seriously cost them sales. So it's almost like the review market for videos on YouTube has kind of gotten split between these are the mainstream products that for the most part are going to be good. And those reviews are not going to be so much, is this a good product in terms of its quality, but rather, is this product a good fit for your needs? That was the whole point behind that NAS review I did. I found myself in a situation that I felt a lot of other people would find themselves in, right? NASs have been a thing for a very long time, so a lot of other people have probably gotten into them years ago. They're running out of space, the hardware is getting older, they want more performance, they want more drive bays, whatever. They want to move to something newer, bigger, better. Is this particular model a good fit for that? That was the whole point of the review. Yet I think some people came in expecting more trash talking. Oh, they cut corners here. Oh, this is junk. Oh, I hate this. Oh, all the nitty-gritty minutia, you know, to help them solidify their opinion, their predisposed opinion of that company. Because going hand in hand with the criticism of the video itself were also people going in saying, this product is trash because it's too expensive for what you get. I can go and build my own thing for a quarter of the cost. I've had so many people comment saying, I could build that using $200 worth of parts, you know, or why not just go buy a used server off of eBay? You'll get so much more performance and so many more drive bays and blah, 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 blah. Well, they're not getting the point. I don't want a damn server sitting in my living room, right? Nobody does. Like, only a very small number of people will have the space to put a full-sized, like, used enterprise server, like, in their basement or whatever. I don't want the power consumption or the heat or the noise or the physical space that something like that would take up. Plus, there's all the ongoing maintenance of that sort of thing. If hardware were to fail because it's used, you're buying it off of eBay for $200, that means it's been decommissioned, so parts are more likely to fail because of age. Plus, there's the whole software thing. Oh, now you got to deal with installing software on top of bare hardware yourself, configuring it the way you want yourself. If it breaks, it's up to you to fix it. That's the whole point behind NASs like Synology and all the other brands, QNAP, AsusStor, all those. Why they offer those as products is for people who don't want to deal with that crap. Could I do that? Could I have gone out and created a video showing how I built my own NAS? Yes, I absolutely could. But I don't want to because, one, a lot of other people have done that, so it's kind of old hat. But two, I don't have the time or energy to put up with that crap. I simply want to use a NAS as a tool and not another hobby. That's kind of a parallel that I have with like 3D printers. There's a lot of 3D printer channels out there where they approach 3D printing as a hobby in and of itself. I bought a 3D printer to use it as a tool. In some ways, I could care less how it works. I bought the model of 3D printer that I bought because it's much more like an appliance than it is a hobbyist thing. Yes, it cost me more money. I could have gotten a 3D printer that produced the same quality of results for probably half as much as I paid for mine. But that half-price model requires a lot more time to set up and a lot more maintenance to keep it working well. I bought an appliance for a 3D printer, just like I have an appliance for a NAS. And so I think that's lost on people. And kind of coming back to the whole, like, people coming in looking for negativity, it's like a separate genre for those kinds of videos, right? Like, we see people doing lots of unboxing and product reviews in quotation marks of just junk that they bought off of like eBay or AliExpress, where the product quality itself is really bad. The manual's been poorly translated. Almost all of it comes from China. It's kind of gotten to the point where it's almost like racist with where people have been going with these videos. Oh, look at all this garbage that we got from China. Yes, it's low quality. But do you really need to synonymize an entire country with being something like that? Remember, iPhones and MacBooks are made in China, and they are ostensibly high quality. pick any other brand of something that you like. It's probably manufactured in China. It's a completely different genre of reviews to expect to go into that review to trash talk the product, to point and laugh at it. Ha, look at how garbage this is. It was built poorly, cheap quality materials. It doesn't even work, blah, 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 blah. I simply do not want to go down that path. What's frustrating, though, is you look at all of the bigger content creators who do reviews full time. They never disclose. I have a big appreciation for Marques Brownlee, MKBHD. He does excellent videos, but he never discloses. I don't know how he's getting his products. Sometimes I know for sure they're just loaners. Like basically most any Apple product reviews. And I think maybe once or twice in a video over the past few years, he's kind of casually explained, like, this is just a loaner. I have to give it back soon. But like if it's a MacBook, you know, or an iPhone that just came out or whatever, I know for sure Apple requires you to return the product at the end. But what about all the other manufacturers whose products he reviews? It's unclear where he gets them from. Now, of course, he makes enough money where he can go out and literally buy every single product that he reviews. And maybe he does that, but he doesn't say so. And that kind of bothers me because I don't really see anybody calling him out when he goes to Apple product presentations in California. He lives on the East Coast. So obviously he flies out there. Does he pay for that himself? Or is he a big enough channel where Apple pays to fly him out? I don't know. None of that is clear. And I can see why some people might get a little frustrated when they're used to having that silence because they don't have to think about it, right? If you don't disclose anything like that, only a very small percentage of viewers will actually start thinking about, hey, where did this product come from? Otherwise, you just get sucked right into the technical minutiae of the product and the review and all that, where you just kind of gloss over, hey, wait, how did he get that? That sort of thing, right? The honest truth is, the majority of the time, the company lets you keep the product. Primarily, the reason for that is not so much that they're doing it as a way to entice people to review, or the more cynical thinking would be to entice people to leave a favorable review. It's more around the logistics of it. It's not the company, like their warehouse or whatever, just sending you a thing. A lot of times it's the marketing people themselves. Like when I have received product to do a review on where I get to keep it, or even if I have to return it, it's usually the media contact that I'm working with, you know, in the marketing department at that company who is personally boxing it up and shipping it out. They've got their own stock of review product that they can send out. And so within that pool of equipment, you know, it kind of counts as part of their marketing budget. So they get X amount allocated to them, you know, every quarter or every year or whatever to send out for marketing purposes. And so they just need to work through that because once that product gets shipped, it's off the books and that's done, right? It's too logistically challenging for them from like that bookkeeping, accounting, whatever kind of side to be dealing with, okay, these particular items are out for review. Here's who they're with. In 3 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever, we expect them back. Then they come back into, from that person, they go back into the loaner pool and all this kind of stuff. And it just gets to be a challenge. It's a lot easier for them to just count it as part of the budget and write it off as an expense when they send it out and just not expect it to come back. And sometimes companies will, like towards the end of the year, towards the end of the quarter or whatever, just need to go and clear out that closet to get that stuff off their books. If you remember a few years ago, I randomly got this package from Lenovo. They reached out to me out of the blue one day and said, hey, Colin, you know, we found your channel. We like your videos. We know you like ThinkPads. We just want to send you a care package. There was no expectations of me doing a video about anything. Okay, cool. And I figured it would just be marketing swag, right? And some of it was, you know, I got like some socks out of the deal, that sort of stuff. And in the bottom of the box was a ThinkPad, a brand new ThinkPad X1 Extreme, which blew my mind. Why would you send me this? Now, it wasn't a brand new model. It had been on the market at that point for 6 to 9 months, something like that. As it turns out, because I saw other YouTubers create videos around the same time, they had reached out to several other channels and just sent them similar care packages. LGR got a very similar box of stuff like I did, and he also got an X1 Extreme. Turns out they were just trying to clean out their marketing closet, right? They had to get all this junk off their books. Please take this stuff. So I got an entire box of socks shipped to me. And if memory serves, because this was several years ago, I ended up giving them away to Patreon supporters at the time. So sometimes it really is as innocent as that. Now, I did end up doing a review on the X1 Extreme because it was an interesting computer. And I felt like it was worth it, especially since in that unboxing video, I asked the audience, do you want to see a review of this laptop? And I made it very clear that they just sent this to me out of the blue. And I also made it very clear in that review that Lenovo had just sent it to me out of the blue with no expectations of a review or anything. And that video went over just fine. So something has changed between then and now. That ThinkPad was worth more money than the NAS that Synology sent me. Yet somehow that Synology video got way more pushback. I kind of wonder, you know, if I could go back, if I had edited down that beginning just to say, hey, Synology sent me this, now let's get into the review, and cut out the rest of that disclosure, would have I gotten the same response? I don't know. Regardless, things have definitely changed in the review landscape, and I'm at the point where I think I'm just done doing product reviews. Not just because this most recent one absolutely bombed, which again, I'm frustrated about, but also because I don't think it's really worth the grind necessarily anymore. And what got me away from doing embargoed reviews, which I used to do, and that's where a company has a brand new product that's about to come out and they send you that product before it's released so that you can have a review that goes live right as it comes out. The agreement behind those is that you get the review unit before anyone else even knows about it, but you have to stay quiet about it until a very specific date and time. So the last one that I did was for the Analog Pocket. And I had done a couple of previous Analog consoles as well. Analog Pocket was highly anticipated, right? They kind of pre-announced it a little bit. They didn't give you all the details on it, but the general public knew it was coming. But that was an embargoed review. They sent me the unit about a week in advance, which was a little bit too short a notice. I wish I had had it for longer, but they sent me that unit a week in advance. They said, here's the specific date and time, you know, that you have to wait until before you can release a video, talk about the product, anything like that. Okay, fine. So I bust my ass to test the product, create a video, edit it, and all that in time for that embargo date. And especially, mind you, I'm sick as a dog as this is happening. That's at the very beginning of when we've talked about this before, some of the kind of health issues that I've been dealing with. So I'm like sick in bed as I'm typing up the script on my laptop, just trying to get that thing done in time. Because everyone else who was reviewing that product also had that same date and time. So everyone was going to release their videos all at the same time. It actually kind of became a little bit of a joke, at least on Twitter, where it's like, oh, can anyone tell that Analog Pocket is now available? Because like YouTube just got flooded with all of these reviews. My Analog Pocket review didn't go anywhere, at least compared to everybody else's. There was too much competition of sorts between all the videos. There were too many people who reviewed that product. And because my channel was smaller, I just didn't really get any views, at least compared to some of the other ones. So in the end, it wasn't worth my time to deal with that grind. Right? I'm not a full-time YouTuber. I still had a day job to deal with. It wasn't worth the stress and pressure. So after that video, given the results of that video, the relatively low views that I got, I decided after that, I'm not doing any more embargoed reviews. Now I'm at the point where I just don't think I'm going to do reviews anymore at all. Simply because I think there are too many of them on YouTube and too many other creators are doing them wrong, where even if I am honest about a product, I'm not going to get the trust that I've worked so hard with all my other videos to try to build. You know, I'll talk about new products as they're relevant, but they're probably going to be more along the lines of like little indie things, you know, like, hey, here's a little, you know, homebrew sort of accessory for a retro computer kind of things, you know, like Blue SCSI. You know, that's not backed by some giant company. It's a very independent thing. A couple of people working on that one. So I'll mention those sorts of products in videos, but I don't think I'm going to do many, if any, more dedicated product review videos. So that's an occasion where I'm going to fold them. On a bit brighter news, although starting out a little more dark, another thing that has been frustrating me lately is I got in a car accident a couple of weekends ago. Thankfully, no one got hurt. No one got hurt, which is number one, and I'm very thankful for that. But it bums me out because I really like my car. It's not new. It's a 2017, but I've taken really good care of it. And it's easily the nicest car I've ever owned. And up to that point, ever driven. It's not a luxury car, but it's the top trim level of a relatively rare version of that vehicle, where you have to be an enthusiast to have bought that particular combination of features. And I really like that because it filled a very specific niche. It's like it's the perfect car for me because it does literally everything I need it to do. And then I go and get rear-ended by someone who wasn't paying attention. Despite all the hard work I had done to take care of that car, all the maintenance, I always park out in the back corner of the parking lot away from everyone else, still managed to get like a door ding on the car, but that's just the way life goes. And it's just really frustrating because, you know, now I can't drive it, right? I got rear-ended. Thankfully, the damage wasn't severe. The car isn't totaled, but it's got to get repaired. And I've been in accidents in other cars before, and no matter how good the body shop is, the vehicle is just never quite the same. If you go looking, you will find the difference. You'll find mistakes or something like that. You can just tell that the vehicle has had work done to it. So now my car isn't necessarily that perfect cream puff survivor car anymore. And so now I know, like, every time I look at that car after it's going to get repaired, those tiny little flaws, they're just going to bug me. And that's really frustrating. And even beyond that, just driving has become a more frustrating experience because of the changes in society. And if you live outside the U.S., maybe you've seen this, maybe you haven't. But here in the U.S., the pandemic definitely changed people. I think people were changing pre-pandemic too, but it accelerated things quite a bit. Nobody cares anymore, especially when driving, right? Like, I've seen so many more accidents and near misses and just occasions of people driving badly. I've seen so many more people flying down the freeway at literally 100 miles an hour or running through red lights or weaving in and out of traffic, you know, doing dangerous maneuvers just to get one or two cars ahead and then blow through a stop sign or something like that. Like, just blatant disregard for other humans. And, you know, I feel like I've been a good enough driver to be able to get myself out of those situations when I see them happening around me. You know, let's just get out of the way, let those people drive bad, get in a wreck with someone else. And then, you know, finally my day has come. And through no fault of my own, somebody, you know, not paying attention, I guess, just decides to not hit the brakes. You know, so now it kind of spurs all this thinking in my head about, like, you know, why do I even bother trying to keep something nice? You know, if everyone else doesn't care and or is kind of out to get you passively, what's the point? You know, why should I even bother trying to continue to keep this car nice? Maybe after I get it back from the body shop, I should just like sell it and go buy a beater. You know, if you're going to get in an accident with a car, you might as well get in an accident with a car that isn't worth very much. And there could be some argument for that because it's like, well, I don't really drive very much as it is. But then I'd be driving a car that I don't like. And life's too short to go through it being pissed off. You know, that internal struggle of, you know, what's the lesser of the two evils? Taking that risk of trying to keep something nice and having someone else, you know, maybe break it again versus just giving up and hating yourself for having given up. But I think this time around, I'm not gonna. Yeah, my car isn't going to be perfect anymore, but that's also life. My wife's car isn't perfect either. She's been in she's only been in one accident with her car, but she's had it hail damaged twice. So three things that were not of her fault. That poor car has been in the body shop three times, and it's a 2019 model. It got hail damaged 6 months after we bought it, brand new. It was her first brand new car. She had always been driving hand-me-downs and stuff prior to that. And then 2 years later, it gets hail damaged again, and 6 months after that, due to no fault of her own, she gets in an accident. So, you know, it's like we're kind of all going through that same amount of shit, and it sucks. It makes you be like, you know, well, we can't have nice things. But does that mean you shouldn't try? I don't think so. I think you should try. Regardless of how nice or not nice your thing is, you should still take pride in it. And if it otherwise makes you happy, the thinking that I'm coming to is just hold on to what happiness you still have left. Even if the world is out to get you, there still is some good there, and we should focus on that. So I'm not going to give up on driving. I'm not going to give up on that particular car, because after it gets fixed, it's still going to be the perfect car for me. I just have to adjust my expectations a little bit. It might be a little flawed after I get it back. And who knows? I mean, maybe this body shop, it's a different body shop that's highly rated. Maybe they'll do amazing work. All I can do is try. So I'm getting back up on that horse. You know, I'm going to keep riding it. I guess the other interesting thing about that scenario, though, is for the next couple of months, I have a rental car because I can't drive my current car, and the shop is going to take a little while to start repairing it and for that repair to get done. So the other person's insurance is paying for everything, so they're paying for me to have a rental car for a couple of months. And I chose something quite a bit different than what I normally would have picked. And that's going to be the topic of the next episode. As always, thanks for listening.